Warning, the hosts of this program are not broadcast professionals. They have no idea what they're doing. They are bad at this. One of them uses swear words. A lot. All complaints about this show are correct. You have been warned. This is your last chance to download a real podcast. Okay, you asked for it. Here are Dave Brown and Iron Mike Irons. This is Entitled Town.
All right. Thank you, Al. We're back. Another Entitled Town. We took a week off because we can. No one could stop us from doing it. So we did it. And Al, during the time off, he had some interesting thoughts. He suggested, okay, that we kick Al into co-host and then slide you out, and then we just go find another announcer. That was Al's idea. Thoughts?
Well, I had an idea, Brown.
What's that?
Let's trade Al to stay under the mid-market competitive balance tax for podcasts. We don't want to become the off-day podcast on radio.com. Al, see ya.
Are you saying that Al is our, like, basically our MVP, and that we should trade him to approve the whole franchise?
No, what I'm saying is that you signed Al to a long-term contract. We can't amnesty him. Let's just trade him. He's a sunk cost. Let's move on.
You know what? This is an honest to God fact, is that Al has made more money off of this podcast than anyone.
Ain't hard to do. He finds a nickel going to the can. He's made more money than you and I combined.
I swear to God, 100%. Al, among the three of us, Al is the best earner from this podcast.
You want to talk about a low bar, Brown? Jesus.
I know, but it's true. And you know what? I don't know how much longer we can support that salary, but he's saying
Al is not cap friendly.
You don't think Al's cap friendly? There's no cap. There's no salary. Well, I mean,
have you looked at the books, Brown? Jesus.
It's whatever we want to spend, really, which it was similar to John Henry.
We're cheap, caller. We're cheap.
We don't pay our players. That's, you know, this is like is this a Kraft and Bill Belichick situation, or is this a John Henry situation? What's going on?
Well, it's clearly arrogance, caller.
Arrogance and ego. The twin pillars of certain doom. Right?
It's sad but true. It's like
arrogance and ego.
We've already talked more about Al in this opening than I want to talk about in the whole off season. Can we just move on?
But are we talking about Al? That's the thing. I feel like we've actually just covered a whole lot of important ground. And
don't get existential on me, Brown. Jesus.
I think we want to talk about a tweet that triggered you from Ken Laird. I think we want to talk a little bit about this Tom Brady situation. I think we don't necessarily need to overwhelm people right now, because as far as the Patriots go, there is a bit of a holding pattern right now while the combine's going on. But
can I reiterate what I said our last podcast?
Which was,
don't believe anything about Tom Brady, mm-hmm. the speculation, until you get remotely close.
Are you sure about that? Because Jimmy Stewart said something today that his sources told him that Brady is 100% gone. So, I mean, shouldn't we just...
Jimmy Stewart said something. Did he meow at the beginning?
I don't know.
Spare me. Jimmy Stewart is nothing more than a fluffer for Tony Maserati. He hasn't yet got to the status to be a fluffer for Felger. So spare me that shit.
I'm Dave Brown. I'm here with Ironhead, Iron Mike Irons, and Ironhead. He said he had sources.
Yeah, the voices in his head? Come on, spare
me. He did Jimmy not.
What did I just say? Jimmy Stewart is a nobody who gets Michael Felcher's hair dye. Spare me the sources bullshit.
He has sauces.
Yeah, he has sauces. Greg Hill has sauces too on his
according
podcast.
According to my honey mustard, Brady is gone.
According to my Trader Joe's ketchup, Tom Brady is headed to Nashville.
According to my horsey sauce. Goodbye, Mr. Brady. Horsey sauce, is that Arby's? Is that what that
are
is?
Are we really going to do hot fast food takes?
Donkey sauce is...
I'm not commenting on anything donkey sauce. Jesus.
Donkey sauce is that fat creep on the Food Channel, right? I can't think of his name. Diners, Dives, and...
Guy Fieri
with his... I think he puts a lot of donkey sauce in his hair because he has like a lot of hair product. But anyway... Well, we got to the bottom of donkey sauce. So that's a good start. But I was going to say, before we talk about the Laird tweet that triggered you, before we talk about the Brady situation, the holding pattern that the news is in, I want to dial back to last week a little bit and just another one of what seems like an endless stream of moments where the Boston Globe's NFL writer says something that is entirely preposterous. And this time, I'm really proud. I feel like the public response was appropriately derisive and combative and like, stop doing this. Because last week, Ben Volen tweeted that the Patriots should be, that because, and I'm going to try to frame his argument in the best way that I can.
Yeah, good luck because, with that.
Because Joe Tooney is a free agent and expected to make a good sum of money because he was just an all-pro, that because of this, they should let Tooney go. Or I guess if Tooney does go, they should take Isaiah Wynn, kick him over to guard, just kick him over there. And so
hold on. Take a first-round tackle.
Yeah. There's more.
Who's cost-controlled.
Right.
The left tackle is the most premium of positions on the offensive line.
You've got control over him for up to 3 more years.
All right. So go ahead.
And then what you do is, so that's phase one. You kick Isaiah Wynn over to guard. This isn't that part of it. Okay. So Wynn had, since he was drafted, has been, this has come up a lot. Like when he was drafted, it was he could play tackle, but he might be more suited to play guard because of his height. And part of the problem with that is the reason that you look at height and prototypical height for a tackle is a couple inches taller than Isaiah Wynn. And part of the reason that you look at, he's about 6'2". So you like a tackle who's like 6'4". The reason that this comes up is it's not really the height. It's the wingspan. It's like you want arms long enough to be able to do what you need to do to keep a pass rusher at arm's length, okay? And the longer your arms are, the better. Isaiah Wynn's arms are in the tackle range. His arm length is actually in the range for most tackles. So people look at that height and they say, well, maybe he's better suited to play guard than tackle. And that was a big thing coming out of for him coming out of Georgia when he was drafted.
So what was the reductive reasoning about Wynn not being able to play tackle? He's too short, that correct?
Exactly, right. Because
and what was the reductive reasoning about Matt Light in 2001?
Right. Yes, right. Right. No, you're right.
Is he was too Light? Tall, and Light was too Isaiah tall. Wynn's too short. What's going to be the common denominator? The media are going to be wrong again. He's a very good left tackle who's cost controlled, and you know, sliding him to guard is a preposterous move. And it's like, and Volen, and I'm kind of stepping on what you're doing here, Dave. What Volen's saying, just move Wynn to guard and figure out left tackle.
All right.
You have a prospective 43-year-old quarterback. Just figure it out. It doesn't matter.
Since you brought up Matt Light, okay, and again, it's this issue of Matt Light was over 6'4". All right. Isaiah Wynn is 6'2". Well, they actually have him at 6'2¾". So, I mean, look, what are we talking about here? But the arm length.
That's an Irish foot. 3¼ inches is an Irish foot.
An arm length, Isaiah Wynn, 33 3/8 inches on his arms. Matt Light, 33.5 inches.
So you just did, Dave, you just did more research into that fact in the Boston media in its entirety.
Well, it was, yeah, and it was a thing in the beginning that some people were saying, well, he might be more of a guard than a tackle. And look, that's true. That was the commentary on draft.
Conventional wisdom is rarely correct.
Okay, so let's continue to examine this issue because if when he first came to the Patriots, they were like, look, we're going to put the best offensive line out there that we can because they just picked up Trent Brown for 1 year. All right, and they had Wynn, and it was like, who's going to play left tackle? Is one of these guys, you know, is maybe are we going to see Wynn move to guard somewhere? You know, things like that. Could they trade one of these guys? All of these things were in play. Isaiah Wynn gets hurt. Trent Brown was already winning the left tackle job, so he was locked in for 18. Come this year, in the 8 games that he started, Isaiah Wynn played pretty well, did a good job. You know, not necessarily the best left tackle in the league, but more than competent, doing a very good job. So now you have a very good left tackle who is making rookie contract money. That is a huge bonus. You know, Trent Brown is out. The last two people who played left tackle for them are making record money.
Yeah, Brown and Nate Solder. Giants.
Solder went to the Giants on a record deal, and then Brown went to Oakland on a record deal.
Okay. Dave, correct me. It's almost an advantage to get great players at fixed costs.
Huge, huge advantage. If you can have a left tackle who is playing as well as Isaiah Wynn has shown us he can play, and you're not paying him like a second contract free agent type price tag.
And the Pats have done that time and again. They did it with Light. They did it with Solder. They did it with Vollmer. I mean, time and again, they've identified with the help of
Marcus Cannon.
Skarnecchia. Cannon is a mid-round pick. Even better is like they've done a really good – they get vilified time and again by mediates who look for low-hanging fruit for not being able to draft wide receivers. Okay, like I'll let that go. But like they're so good at drafting on the interior, and you build a football team on the interior.
Now, the other half of – the equation and the other half of Ben's suggestion is so you kick Isaiah Wynn to guard and then you find a left tackle.
Yeah, just find him. It's easy.
Find him. Now they have a couple tackles on the roster. You know, they have Froholt, who hasn't played at all. He's been hurt. They have Yadni Kajust, who hasn't played at all. He's been hurt. I want to say, and now I've got them confused, but I think that Froholt could play guard. So why not just kick Froholt over to guard?
Oh, the facts, schmacks. Come on.
So why not go that route? But here's the problem, okay? And
Dave, can I interrupt you really quickly?
Yes.
When you peruse Volan's Twitter timeline, don't you get the impression that he's a man, a solitary man living in an apartment that may or may not contain a chicken? I mean, what he's doing, it's banal at best. Seinfeld reference. I'm so sorry. Okay.
Go ahead.
I'm trying to make my references more contemporary for you. What Volan is doing, it's a poor troll job. And it's like, I beg you, if you're listening to this podcast, go to Twitter, put in @BenVolan, and just go down his timeline. Don't bother with his replies. His observations are sub-replacement level. If he was a relief pitcher, he'd be John Wasdin. He wouldn't be as good as John Wasdin. He is the lead NFL writer for the Boston Globe, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Boston Red Sox. Ben Volan is not worth your time. The only time that Ben Volan is worth is if you're listening to this for us to deconstruct him and ridicule him. He is an embarrassment.
And here's why I want to make the point.
Is a mittens wearing, feces flinging dullard. Done.
It was kind of a great moment because a lot of the football community who don't usually call out other people were calling out Ben for this. And it's, you know, it's just one of those things where it's such a preposterous idea. Now, look, if the Patriots go out and draft a first round tackle, if the Patriots go out and sign, you know, somebody who is an exceptional tackle, and it's like, okay, it starts to make sense. But the idea that your plan is we're just going to go find someone and just start now from the premise that Isaiah Wynn is a guard, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't work. It's just preposterous. And
if you fling shit often enough, sometime it's going to hit a bullseye.
Well, as Josh Gordon is going to get cut, take is like,
Volin's take was Brandon Cooks was going to be cut.
No.
And they got a first round pick for him.
Right. Well, he wanted to cut Brandon Cooks, but he did say that Josh Gordon might be the odd man out last year, right before Gordon got cut. So he basically, like, it is very much a broken clock results.
Correct.
That, like, Ben says something preposterous all of the time. The one time it happened, and I guess if you're going to defend him, like, you'll point to that and say, well, he was right about that. But it should have been shocking to anyone that they cut Gordon, and then we later found out that Gordon, again, tested positive.
Yeah, when he signed with Seattle, he was suspended.
Sometime after.
And I got to tell you, like, the Globe is not alone in their malfeasance with Mittens. WEI has him on as their football expert in the morning.
Okay, so at least I can go from, like, if I want to sit here and say that a radio station has, and I disagree with this premise, but a radio station probably believes that it's in their best interest to put somebody's going to say things that are preposterous on the air to, you know, rile up their audience. And that's a theory that at WEI they've gone a lot with, and I don't know that I think it might be a reason why that they are in second place, because they don't do it as well as the Hub, as Sports Hub. And they're
in fifth place in a two-team race.
Yeah.
I'd argue that.
But I think the reason they struggle is because they try to play somebody else's game, and the competitor has all the best players in this game. You know, Adam Jones, as much as you and I might dislike the content, he says the craziest things that rile people up more than anyone. And he's not working for what I get.
He's not working
for the paper of record. I expect more. Now, I think you'll be on board with this. I expect more from the Boston Globe than I do from the radio stations.
Why? What evidence? Give me one fact.
Somebody has to be the adult in the room. Unfortunately.
Who's the adult? Michael Felcher?
No.
Ben Volin?
No, that's the problem. There is no adult in the room. I want the Boston Globe to be the adult in the room. They are choosing
John. You want John Henry to be the adult in the room.
Who's
the editor of the Globe, Dave?
I don't understand why you're tagging me. I want to expect more from the
90 Globe. Seconds, no commercials. I'm going at Brown. Who's the adult in the room, Dave, at the Globe? Who's the adult?
I want one. I'm not saying that there is one. I'm saying I want the Globe to be the adult in the room. And when you're putting somebody out there who...
Why the Globe? Why the Globe, though?
Oh, because of the history of this market. And they have...
History doesn't matter. The Herald was bought by a venture capital firm in Denver. No, Bob Kraft should have bought the fucking Herald to combat what's going on.
You should have bought the Herald. It wasn't that expensive.
Yeah. When they sold the property at Wingo Square in the South End, yeah, you're right. I probably could have afforded it. Post-dated check. But it's that's
no, that, I just
this
mean
is
that,
what frustrates just mean, me, Dave. This is what
the intellectual property, me. You know, the name. I think you could buy the name and the
I want to buy the domain wingosquare.com. My late friend Ozzy coined the Herald as Wingo Square because they were always doing that Fakata game back in the day. But like,
you're talking about
the fact that you take the Globe seriously as a player distributing is terrible.
You are misrepresenting my position. I'm not
saying you've never done that with me.
I'm saying this. Listen, just because you vouched for Ben Volen doesn't mean you need to take it out on me. Okay, now.
Now you're going to have Tomasi's job counselor. If you're going to create fiction of this level, te salute, Don Corleone. You're going to get two in the hat.
Here's how you're
misrepresenting. Have someone else start your car tomorrow morning, Brown.
That's what, my wife will do it. Now, here's...
Oh, you're such a gallant, gallant person. Well done.
What? Are you saying women can't start cars? That's ridiculous. Now, here's the thing.
You're an expert moving the goalposts. I almost like it.
I'm a feminist. I don't know about you, but I think anyone could start a car.
Shirley Long's in our next segment. 90 seconds, no commercials.
Thank you. Al is clapping. All right. So... And Al is not on board with your Ben Volen vouch. But listen,
I'm not on board with your Al vouch, so we're even.
You took off and ran with my comment, and I need to make it something explicit and clear. Okay, I am against authoritarian regimes.
Well, no. Lord knows you've never misrepresented what I've stood for. So go ahead.
Okay. My point is this. I think that the Boston Globe could be, I think that it is an entity that has a lot of history and that people could take it seriously. And
you're
it could
a prisoner
be
of the
better.
Past, Dave. You're a prisoner of the past.
Maybe I am. But I'm saying the potential is there for them to be better. And they need to be, that is the one, they all need to be better. But that one needs to be better the most. You can't be the Boston Globe, okay?
The potential is there for me to bet an SI supermodel. It ain't going to happen. Come on.
I could listen. This is a completely different situation. First of all, they could hire anybody else they wanted to tomorrow and just do it better. They could go find somebody who is a genuine...
Hold on.
They could find someone who understands the NFL.
Why? What makes you believe in their current ownership that their ethos is going to change?
I'm not trying to say that they're going to do that. I'm not telling everyone to go sign up for a subscription.
So what
I'm
are you doing?
What we do here, I'm saying I want to see something better out of them. Why is this?
Of course we want to see something better.
Yes.
What gives you faith that that's going to happen under the current regime?
This isn't about faith. I'm just saying what needs to happen. And I'm saying that, yes, the Boston Globe needs to be the best one. They need to be the best one.
Why does the Globe have to be the appointed one? Why?
Because, and this is a great question. There is a perception that they already are. And it's not your perception and it's not my perception, but it is among a lot of people. And you know where it is especially perceived is outside of the market.
I agree with you there because Dan Shaughnessy is always,
very
always respected the face of outside. Boston sports.
Yes. Right. Now you're getting it. So
that's why that's why the Globe needs to be discredited.
If you're sitting there in Dallas and you're like, all right, what's the deal with Tom Brady? How am I going to go find out what's up with this Tom Brady situation? You're going to go read the Boston Globe. And that's why they need to be better.
Okay? No, I would argue that's why they need to be further discredited. Not that they need...
Yes, but both of these things. I'm saying we hold them to a higher standard. And I'm saying that what Ben does on the radio bothers me less than that he's doing it for the Globe. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Well,
they both bother me. I'm just saying that when it's the Globe, there's like this added layer of credibility and normalcy to it that's more dangerous than when it's being goofy on the radio with who they got now, Greg Hill.
He does not have the prospect of being intentionally goofy. He just, that's his default setting. But
fine.
So hold on. Let me ask you a question, counselor. I want to ask you a question. We've discussed... Quite
We're
often
saying
here.
Exactly.
Hold on, please.
Yes.
You have a gun with one bullet. You're in a room with Greg Bedard and Ben Volen. Do you kill yourself or one of the other two?
I'm not a violent person.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Listen, I'm just saying this. I think if I'm in a room with those two people and I have a gun with one bullet, that if I put the gun on the floor and stand back, I'm going to be the only person alive. Eventually. That's all I'm saying. So I'm not going to intervene. Okay. Something's going to happen. I think if I just through nonviolent intervention and leave those two alone with a dangerous weapon, they're going to figure out a way to do themselves in. That's what I think we just
gave M. Night Shyamalan the next plot to his movie or his next movie.
Shyamalan?
Yeah. What you said. Yeah.
So anyway, all I'm saying is I do want to hold.
Volin and Bedard are both toxic. We agree on that.
Of course.
Yeah.
I just want to be clear that because of the way this paper is perceived both in and out of the market, the normalcy, the credibility that it has, deserved or not, it's real.
We agree on the point, Dave. We just disagree on how to go about improving.
And I'm saying they need to be better. And you're right that like
the. And I'm saying the situation needs to be better. The globe doesn't need to be better.
It doesn't help that WEI is putting them on the radio. I'm just saying that at the end of the day, you can play this game where you're like, well, you know, the radio likes provocative content.
Well, do you know why? Do you know why Mittens goes on WEI?
Because they won't have him on the other one?
Well, he works cheap. We're not talking about a towering intellect.
Well, how do you know
the grasp of finance? He gets Teddy 20s. Do you know what Teddy 20s are?
I don't know what you're talking about, and I don't know if it's true.
All right, well, I can confirm Teddy 20s. Do you remember Ted Sarandis back on WEI at nights?
No.
All right. Well, Ted Sarandis was a 7 to 12 host on WEI in the late aughts.
Who's the other guy? Planet Mikey.
Oh, God.
Mike Adams, right?
Planet Juan. Jesus Christ. Mike Adams is now spinning Def Leppard records on a radio station that no one listens to in Maine and New Hampshire. Ted Sarandis.
Wish I was doing
basically
that.
Basically, Glenn Ordway, after having a charisma bypass back in the day between 7 and 12 at night in WEI. And he was, oh, God. I don't even have the words to describe. He was a BC honk, BC basketball honk. He was the worst. Charisma bypass, uninteresting, and hated his listeners, hated himself, hated his job. Let's move on. I'm getting triggered by thinking about.
All right. Well, since we're talking about WEI and you being triggered, earlier today,
Ken Laird fucking
responded to. So there was this picture of Belichick. I think this is what he was responding to, right? So he was at
Jeff Howe wrote a piece on The Athletic, friend of Entitled Town. Jeff Howe wrote a piece for The Athletic today. Regarding Brady and the Patriots offseason. And there was a picture that had Bill Belichick, I believe at Middle Tennessee State, in the rain, witnessing scouting drills with a credential and a whistle.
Mm-hmm.
And
some people said, hey, this is Bill Belichick, hard at work, looking for talent.
Yeah, so, I mean, Bill Belichick is in February in Tennessee, at what most would perceive as second-level school, is scouting, doing the grind. Most of us who make an honest living, unlike Pittsburgh Ken Laird, can empathize with going through something like that. So the Athletic Boston headline, I'm kind of bearing lead here, was what are they doing? The people want to know about the Patriots' plans for the offseason and Tom Brady. And there's a photo of Belichick, as I just mentioned, with a whistle, a credential in the rain at Middle Tennessee State. And the despicable Ken Laird, who is basically Chris Curtis's fluffer, tweets today, Belichick is working out on his Twitter account, quote, Belichick is working out B prospects in the rain in Tennessee while Foxborough is burning, end quote. I'm going to take a second to let the absurdity and ignorance of that statement sink in.
Ken Laird has 9,782 followers, and that tweet received 7 likes. And one
again,
of them.
We're not talking with somebody who's really plugged in here. Ken Laird works for WEI. which is about 6 months away from spinning Blake Shelton almost nonstop.
One of his seven likes is from Danielle Murr, who's on the Greg Hill show.
So a colleague.
So basically, yeah, coworker, because Ken produces the Greg Hill show. And I think looking at these, I think one of them might be ironic. So
I think more than half of them are ironic.
At least one I feel pretty confident about.
Yeah, I do as well. So let's just set aside the absurdity of this shit. WEI. Now, the morning show on WEI is barely, and I mean barely, related to sports, which is not a sin in and of itself, whatever. They talk about whatever, you know, whatever headlines they get from their news subscription service. I don't give a shit. Greg Hill's a dummy. Ken Laird's a dummy. Chris Curtis is a disingenuous dummy. Danielle, I don't know what the hell, if she knows what the hell she's talking about. But the fact that Ken Laird thinks that he can be, you know, when he's typing this sick Patriots burn into the Twitter machine, he thinks he's going to get dozens of retweets and likes, and he's going to do Greg Hill's bidding.
Well, I mean, there's got to be a point. It's where...
they, what do I say all the time, Dave? They are 98.5, but dumber and worse.
They're playing someone else's game, and they're not doing it well. And this is like, look, EEI, listen to us. Trust me. You're playing. And look, their ratings, and that show in particular, was a huge bounce back for them from the previous rating show. With the ratings for
they're the only show actually getting some traction in the market on that station.
So they're doing fine in the radio, but listen, you're playing someone else's game. And at that time of day, it's a little bit different because that...
You don't take on Tyreek Hill in a 40-yard dash. You don't do that.
Really, it's not all sports shows. It's like you have two converted rock shows, like rock DJs who converted.
Yeah, there's nothing sports-ish about Toucher and Rich. They actually... When I'm home and listening to that station, I do not listen to that station streaming. I just can't.
But listen.
Anyway, listen. They're bad.
WEI, hear me out. You are playing someone else's game, and they are better at it than you. You need a different game. If Adam Jones had tweeted this, like, he'd probably get some buzz on it, maybe. Okay, maybe. I don't even know if his tweets do anything, by the way.
Don't get me started on Jones.
But
Vonesy Jonesy.
He's a better provocateur. Here's the other problem with this tweet. Is that if Bill was not out there looking, you know, be out of college somewhere, like building contact, doing the things that it takes.
If he's on Nantucket with Tits McGee.
If he's on, that's out of line. What are you doing? But like, what is that?
Being fake offended, Dave. Jesus.
I'm not being fake offended. You're taking shots at somebody who's done nothing wrong here. But here's my point is if Bill is like last year, he was on vacation, right? They were calling him Barbados Bill. So if he's out doing that, they're going to say he should be doing this.
What's off brand about Bill Belichick at a workout? There's nothing.
Yeah.
Are you actually surprised by this? You're a dummy. You're a fucking dummy, Ken.
This is what he's supposed to be doing. It's a long
off. He's doing his job.
And by the way,
I mean, that's the hashtag.
They got an extra month of team building this year, and he's out there working still. So this is what gets me. It's the damned if you do, damned if you don't of the Boston sports media.
They can move the goalposts in whichever manner they like.
We're just going to.
And there is somebody, and I thank God that you and I. There is somebody. Is Chad Finn going to do it? No. Somebody's going to call it out. And thank God for social media, because Ken Laird, I think you said he got seven likes. I think there were probably 10 times the responses to that. And I believe that's what the kids today call ratio.
I mean, I'm looking at Adam Jones' Twitter. And I mean,
Adam Jones is Twitter herpes. He's Twitter AIDS. He's the worst.
He doesn't get many interactions either. Like...
Yeah, if you were Michael Felcher's, you know, disowned son, you wouldn't get any either. Adam Jones. Yes. Adam Jones. Let me tell you something. That Here's show one. At night with him and Arcand. Arcand at one time tried to play it straight. Jones is a dummy, and he appeals the dummies. He has no redeeming value at all. That show offers nothing to anyone who likes the teams.
But he's doing nothing. His nonsense. I mean, look, it's a nonsense show, but he's doing it better than anything EEI has. So EEI is like, we'll throw some more nonsense out there, and it's just don't play that game.
You know, I'll disagree with you there. If I was still back in Boston and if I was driving home on a night like tonight, we're recording on Wednesday night, I would throw on Mantanski 1,000 times over Jones.
Well, he's buried. Once.
Mantanski's fine. You know, Mantanski's a sporto, and there's nothing wrong with being a sporto. He's been freed from the dummy Jerry Callahan world, and he's, you know, Mutt, you know, God bless Mutt. Mutt wants to talk gambling. He wants to talk about the games. Great. Good job.
Well, I don't know why I'm doing
that's
this,
not a vouch, by the way.
I'm looking over Adam Jones, and he doesn't get much engagement either. The one, like, oh, here's one with 53.
No, this is about his Miracle on Ice hard-o take. His spindling arm hard-o take that the Miracle on Ice sucked.
That was so weird. Yeah, that it was
over. It's, you know what that is? It's not even ignorance.
It's not impressive.
You know what it is? You know, I hate to make this into the Minifan show 2.0, and I didn't listen to Kirk's show all the way through today. All that is he has no fucking knowledge of the NHL at the NHL trade deadline. So he moves the goalposts to shitting on the Miracle on Ice on the anniversary because if he takes calls on the Bruins trade moves and the other NHL trade moves, he's going to be exposed as a know-nothing. He'll be stammering like Pete Shepard. And all he is a spindly-armed, malnourished Pete Shepard. Ignore Adam Jones. He's not the coronavirus. He is a virus that will die with even less nourishment than he's already getting. Ignore, so, move on.
It is interesting, though, looking over and seeing like some of these tweets that are supposed to be provocative, and they're not really provoking anything. I mean, Adam Jones just doesn't have many engagements. And listen, I can already hear some of our listeners being like,
dude. He has less engagement than muscle tone.
Dave's obsessed with Twitter stats. And it's like, that's not exactly my point. My point is you have people who are trying to be provocative, who are trying to get a reaction, and out in this world of Twitter where every single thing is geared to try to get a reaction, they are just melting into the background of lame takes.
Yeah, think about this.
Which is encouraging in a weird way.
It is. He's on the most popular, never mind sports radio station. Bonesy Jonesy is on the most popular radio station Boston, but New England. And he gets very little social media traction. Mm-hmm. That gives me some hope for the future. Unless John Henry procreates again, then I'm not sure I can summon the will to live.
Well, okay. So I think we've covered the Isaiah Wynn situation where Ben, I want to put a bow on that. I'm just going to say the idea that you're going to vacate a solid left tackle, move him to an easier to fill position, and then go try to find a decent left tackle, which is much harder to do, pitching Marshall Newhouse. I think that's crazy. Okay.
Let me ask you a question, Dave.
And we've covered
what's the most economical position to fill on a defensive line?
Interior lineman? What do you mean by the most economical position to fill?
What's the most cap-friendly position to fill on an offensive or defensive line? Is it interior
or on the ends? For sure, yes.
And it's not close, correct?
I mean, at the top of the, like, nose tackle market,
pedantic.
You're going to top out around,
there's like, not a lot of teams million? That play 3-4 anymore.
You're going to top out around, like, $15 million for those interior guys. And the...
What does Nate Solder make? Closer to $20 million.
Let me look up Trent Brown's annual.
Brown was hurt. Brown was actually really good in his years as a Patriot.
He was.
And I'll tell you, that was another – that Brown year. Trade that they made was another way of them, you know, squeaking out some cap savings and allowing themselves flexibility by drafting.
Wait, are we talking offense? You asked me about the defensive line, right?
No, I was going to try to make an overarching point.
Okay. That
the interior of both lines on both sides of the ball, the interior
– much cheaper.
– typically much cheaper to fill than – the tackles on, you know, just as a point of reference, let's say Trey Flowers on the Lions makes a lot more money than Danny Shelton.
Well, for sure, but I mean, it's also a difference in ability there. All right, so
but they both do their job really well. Is my overarching point. The Lions in the Detroit media, they're already projecting when Flowers is going to be cut.
Yeah, of course, because he doesn't rack up stats.
Yeah, he does his job and he does it well, but
16.5 million per year average.
16.5 million a year. His cap hit next year, Brown's 21. Cap hit next year is $21.5 million as a left tackle. What's Isaiah Wynn's? I'm going to gather it's less than 3 million.
But I'm also going to say this. I mean that is like quarterback money, but they did it that way. It looks like on purpose because he has no dead money.
He was 15 and a quarter last year. 21 and a half this coming season. And then 14. This is the balloon year. And then he goes down to 14 million and 15, a little over 15 million the year after.
How the heck did they do?
But my point stands is like, if you're going to be a tackle on either side of the ball, sliding someone to guard who is cost controlled and good at the job is absurd. Doesn't make sense.
And by the way, the last time that they needed to fill a hole at guard, they drafted one in the third round. Like, you know?
The Tooney trade, and I will call it that, the Tooney trade, it was a win.
It was a Chandler Jones trade.
What way you slice it, it's a win. Chandler Jones, God bless him, good player. Pin his ears back and go after the quarterback. I know that Chandler Jones, I got sick of watching Chandler Jones run behind the quarterback and get blown up, kicked outside in running plays his last year with the Patriots. Good player, by and large, good pick. But Joe Tooney and Malcolm Mitchell and cap relief, come on.
Right. You people can't
understate.
Now.
People really understate the cap relief in those deals and the ability to diversify your cap space.
If you cut... Yeah, all right. So if you keep Chandler Jones, then you either have to give up Dante Hightower,
yep,
who was already on the team, or so they would have had to let Hightower go.
Hightower has made big play after big play in his career with the Patriots.
After
in big, the biggest games.
So they signed him after the 2016 season. They re-signed Hightower. Of the three best defensive players they had, it was Chandler Jones, Jamie Collins, and Dante Hightower. The question was, who was going to get the money? In 2016, the money went to Hightower, and then they went out and they also signed Stephon Gilmore.
Is he good? I feel like he might be good.
well, you couldn't have a roster with both Hightower and Gilmore if you're keeping Jones' money. They then took the draft pick that they got from trading Chandler Jones, and they added Tooney and Malcolm Mitchell. So.
And if you discount what Malcolm Mitchell did in the 2016 season, particularly in the last half of that season, the playoffs, then you're a dummy too.
Any GM in the league would, if you put this proposition to them heading into the playoffs, and they said, okay, you're going to win an AFC championship or the NFC championship, and you're going to be in the Super Bowl, would you trade me a fourth round draft pick right now for 70 yards receiving in the fourth quarter of that game? And I don't think there was one GM in the league who would turn that down.
Yeah, if you rewatch that game, how good he was, it can't be – to get the trust of the quarterback and how good he was in the – I mean, that Falcons team, that team will be lost. The Falcons are actually very representative of most teams in this era. They're built to peak in 1 year. And look at what's happened post that collapse in that game. The Patriots have been good every fucking year, pardon my French, as they have been going back to 2001. The Falcons have cratered. The Rams are in the process of cratering. They're in cap jail with Goff. The way the Patriots manipulate their cap, the decisions they make financially, it is utterly remarkable, and it's right in front of your face. And I don't think it's going to be properly appreciated until this current crop of mediates are gone, present company accepted, because what they've done to stay, even in the year Brady was hurt, it's remarkable. Fuck Ken Laird.
Let's quickly address the Brady situation. So I think that Brady... So we're hearing a lot of speculation and so forth. There's nothing new.
Nothing new since we last recorded.
There's like little minor things. Like I think Tom Curran reported that somebody reported that they talked with Don Gee, Brady's agent in Indianapolis at the combine. So there was a conversation. Tom Curran reported that the real negotiations wouldn't begin until after the combine. I think that's probably true because the last time Brady signed, and we've talked about it on this show with the Seth Wickersham report, where supposedly everybody was running out of town, like as if they were fleeing the combine to go back and deal with Brady's contract. I think that's because it just makes the most sense that they would go see what's at the combine, have all of the information available to them before they sit down and then try to get a deal done with Brady in the 2.5 weeks before free agency starts. And I think
have you been to the combine?
I've actually never been to the combine.
All right.
And I have no interest in going.
All right. Well, that's probably smart on your part, but it's often referred to as the unofficial beginning of tampering season. Can we agree on that?
Sure. Yeah.
All right. So if that's the case, and Jeff Howe reported today, friend of Entitled Town again, Jeff Howe reported that the Patriots and Brady have been able to make deals on at least two occasions, not only in a matter of days, but hours. So if I don't believe, I'm going to repeat what I said the last time we recorded, I don't believe anything until it's done. Anyone who thinks they have an inside with Brady is probably lying. Any of these reports from FS1 reported today that an answer in a Jeff Howe athletic mailbag was a report from Boston. 95% of what is being reported, quote unquote reported, quotation fingers, is bullshit, speculation, or just rumor mongering for clicks. Ignore it.
I think you're exactly right. I think, look, if you want to know if there's a chance that Tom Brady could leave the Patriots, there is a chance.
Of course there is.
That is absolutely true. Do we know for certain anything that's going to happen? No, we don't. One of the things that is making this, that's making this really difficult to handicap is, and probably making this, I mean, look, the Patriots they're all smarter than I am, but one of the things that might be making this, harder than it has to be is this 30% rule.
Correct.
Which, this gets into like the nuts.
It also buys in with the CBA negotiations that are ongoing right now.
I know. I was getting to that. This is the nuts and bolts of the collective bargaining agreement and the salary cap, which is that this is the final year of the collective bargaining agreement that the NFL and the Players Association agreed to in 2011. And what they had in whatever the last year of the last CBA was, I think it was 2010.
It was 2010, correct.
Yeah, they had an uncapped year, and it was total chaos because teams who later got in trouble for this.
The Cowboys.
Right, like the Cowboys, without much,
They got fined. They got fined for spending too much in an uncapped year. Roger Goodell, everybody.
Because what they did was they structured their contracts in a way where they took – They front loaded the contract so that you'd spend the most in the uncapped year and then get some cap relief in future years. And the owners basically decided that those teams abused the system.
It's almost as if, Dave, the NFL owners as a majority can impose punishment at their own whims without regard to the letter of law.
Rules and what's been written down, and they decide your behavior is wrong later. They didn't foresee the problem, and then a problem, and then people abused it. And I mean, look, I don't know. I think they maybe just should have had the Cowboys sit down and restructure some of those deals, maybe. I don't know. But what they did this year, or for this last year of the CBA, instead of an uncapped year, they put in what's called this 30% rule, and it essentially says that for years beyond 2020, you can't have more than a 30% raise from year to year.
And they're doing that for the opposite reason. They don't want the deals to be backloaded to circumvent the cap.
Okay, yeah, yeah, you're right. You're right. Thank you. Because I didn't add up when I was saying it out loud. You're right. Anyway, but they foresaw a potential problem, and they tried to work it out. But now if you're the Patriots and you want to have Brady on for 3 years, but you also want to have some money to spend for 2020, and you have $6.5 million already on the books for Brady, you know, you want to be able to get creative, have a low base salary.
And a half. If it gets the free agency, it's 13.5 per meal.
Right. It's already six. It's already 6.75. You don't want to get the 13.5 if you can avoid it. But that could be realistic. Like, he might enter free agency and then still sign with the Patriots, and now you have to work around $13.5 million. And that's tough if you don't have a new CBA in place.
Doesn't it make sense, though, that they're waiting to see if the CBA can be resolved? Because they could, the goalpost could be moved. And that's why, I'm just throwing this out there, caller. Maybe they're waiting for the CBA to be resolved in the window between.
But I don't think they can wait.
Before free agency. Well, maybe. I mean, we don't know. Like, you and I don't, neither of us have sources. But I think it's at least plausible that they're waiting to see if there can be relief via a new CBA.
Here's the thing. We're talking about some smart people here. If they're working on this contract, then they should be working out two plans right now. They should be working out, here's the deal we're going to sign if there's a new CBA, and here's the deal we're going to sign if there is not a new CBA by March 18th.
Right.
That's how I would do it. I would try to structure it. You know, the Patriots are going to get the most favorable structure for the Patriots
prior to the deadline.
But then Tom Brady has a problem where he wants to put as much guaranteed money as possible. And I don't mean this for financial reasons. Tom Brady wants to play supposedly for 3 more years. That's the premise we're working with, because he has said he wants to play to 45.
Want to be cut.
If he wants to avoid being cut, there has to be a substantial penalty to cut him. So when you talk about Tom Brady trying to make as much money as possible, it's not entirely for personal or financial. Well, it's for personal reason, but it's not so much for financial or to have the biggest contract or to make more money than Jimmy Garoppolo or something like that. There was a very practical reason for it. And it is, as a shield, you build up that that dead money that accrues when you're cut. And let's say that you're guaranteed $30 million over the next 3 years. Well, that's $10 million each year that you take in a cap hit. But then if you cut the player today, that $30 million that's left, that $30 million in dead money, all comes right back onto the cap, and now you're playing with a huge disadvantage because you're essentially paying quarterback money to a quarterback who isn't there. And that's what Tom Brady probably wants to do. So both Patriots and Tom Brady are working uphill against the inflexible system. The Patriots trying to give themselves some chips to play with as they enter this free agency period. Tom Brady trying to stack up some dead money in the future so that the Patriots really take a big hit if he gets cut. And
I just don't think there's going to be anything, even any remote movement, meaningful movement towards a resolution until there's clarity about the CBA, one way or the other.
No, I think the Patriots want this deal done. If they want Tom Brady, they want this deal done before March 18th. Now, you could make the argument, if I'm going to give you a benefit of the doubt here, that it might be.
If you don't know the rules, if you don't have. Let me finish real quick. If you don't know what the rules are.
Let me finish my point. I was playing devil's advocate for you here. So let me finish this point.
Channeling Al. Go ahead.
If you get past March 18th and that 13 and a half now all accrues in 2020, it might be easier to work around that problem without the 30% rule. So there actually might be some benefit in both sides coming to a handshake agreement prior to March 18th and then enacting it after the CBA is done, if the CBA is still not there by the end of this league year on March 18th. So there you go. So you might be right. You might be right. It might be.
And I think we're burying the lead that this potentially, it seems like the players, Russell Wilson is leading, seemingly leading a charge to kind of get, and Marquise Pouncey, God forbid, Marquise Pouncey and Russell Wilson are kind of the leading voices against what the hell are they doing with this new CBA.
Aaron Rodgers, so, too.
That, I think the drama with that has just started.
Aaron Rodgers, Richard Sherman. So,
right.
You know, we don't know how the rank and file feels about it.
Well, the rank and file, but that definition of rank and file is that they're going to be less vocal than people like Sherman and Rodgers and Wilson and Pouncey, that sort of thing.
Well, and you're talking about different constituents.
Those are the rank and file, the ones going to benefit from another game check.
Well, not only that, and this is a key thing that the owners have done here, a tactical move that they've made is increasing the minimum salary by a significant amount. And
short-term gain, and they want long-term labor peace.
And most of the league is on minimum, I think. Most of the league is on minimum deals.
I mean, do the math. What's the average pro football career? It's certainly less than 4 years.
I don't know if most of the league is, but a lot of the league is.
Right.
On those, there are more, like, you know.
If you're a rookie, if you're a drafted rookie, your contract is at minimum, if you sign, your 4 years. If you're a first rounder, you get a fifth-year option.
But
the average career is less than that in the NFL.
The veteran minimum goes up. The rookie minimum goes up. I mean, there are more of those guys on a team than there are Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
Russell Wilson's. Like, there are more of guys whose names we don't know. So, like, in the Patriots locker room, who's like a minimum, like a David Andrews type?
Yeah, J.C. Jackson before the extension, Jonathan Jones. Those guys.
Yes.
Defensive tackle, I'm blanking on.
Not Shelton.
Butler. Butler.
Lawrence Guy.
Lawrence Guy is a veteran, but Butler was an undrafted free agent, and he's a really good player, and he's making the complete minimum, and he'll be a free agent after 4 years, and he'll make some money. But guys like that, I mean, those are the guys that are going to get the benefit, and those are the rank and file is probably, I'm going to guess without looking, the rank and file in the NFLPA, or what used to be the NFLPA before they decertified, like, they make up the voting majority, I would think.
So, like, okay, Jacoby Myers made above the minimum last year. He made $585,000, but under the new agreement, he's up to $700,000.
Yep.
And let's see. Oh, and that's what he's slated to make in 2020. Jacoby Myers is slated to make $585,000. So his salary he automatically goes up to $700,000. So look at all these guys, right? Like, here are all the guys on the roster. There's tons of them. Jarrett Stidham, Tawan Bentley, Halati Froholt, Ryan Izzo, J.C. Jackson, Corey Cunningham, Jake Bailey, Jacoby Myers, Gunnar Olszewski. That's who you're targeting when you raise the minimum salary.
Yeah, you're Adam saying Butler, those guys. I'm looking at Oliver Thomas here on, this is a Forbes.com article. Adam Butler, who is a rookie out of Vanderbilt, undrafted out of Vanderbilt, signed a 3-year, $1.6 million contract with the Patriots. He'll make, think about it. If you change the minimum to $700,000, the difference between $1.6 million over three and $2.1 million minimum over three is huge. That's almost a season under the previous CBA. It's huge, right, for the rank and file.
And some of those guys I left out there. I was just looking at their base salaries. So a guy like Froholt at 690 already. But
yeah, he got a signing bonus and it's
Juan Bentley's at 735. Right. But right. like Gunnar Olszewski, boom. He's a guy like him. Jacoby Myers, he gets a raise. Jake Bailey gets a raise. You know, I mean, Byron Cowart gets a raise. Like, you get a raise. You get, like, Oprah's standing out here counting these votes.
Like Mike Tannehill hanging out contract extensions. Yeah.
So when I hear those prominent players against it, that doesn't necessarily tell me where this is going.
Maybe I couldn't agree more. It's like, okay, they're high-profile players, but they do not represent the majority of the NFLPA. I think what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll be following the vote very closely because they're going to be Richard Sherman's going to be up in arms, the quarterback, et cetera.
And you can already see like the way that this was presented. See, this is where Twitter just makes the news terrible, is that the national guys got right at the guys that we all know who break all the big stories, who have, you know,
the stenographers. Yeah. We've been through that.
The stenographers who have relationship maintenance to be concerned with run straight to Twitter and they say, this is a transformative deal. Can you imagine?
And you can tell exactly
playoff games.
You're so right. And you can tell
so
exactly
much football on Saturday. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah. Monday night wild card game.
Three and I'll tell you Sunday.
What the ownership has done. Playoffs.
It's not talking about playoffs. Football. Like this is what they were. And no one at this point is asking any player how they feel about this proposal.
And it's so duplicitous of the NFL ownership. They put out this message through their stenographers in the media. And it's brilliant in a really diabolical kind of way because they're doing a class division between the rank and file and the top earners.
Well, and they also make it sound
brilliant.
Like,
it's brilliant in its duplicity.
They also ratify. Okay. So what they did was they talked to the players. Then they put out a proposal that they liked. Then they voted on that proposal to make it sound like it was almost a done deal. And then you give it to the players and say, okay, well, everybody's on board. So if this doesn't work out, it's on you. And
it's
that's
brilliant. It's the NFL. Damaris Smith is really bad at his job, like getting ahead of the shit. He should have been screaming. He should have had, maybe he doesn't have any minions in his pocket in media. You got to be out ahead of the shit. The NFL has already won the PR war. It's going to be the greedy players, so on and so forth. And Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson, Marquise Pouncey, Richard Sherman, they're not exactly likable to the NFL populace at large. They're going to be spoiled rich guys trying to keep football from the public. That's all it is.
Well, and there's one term in this deal that I think is good for the players, which is taking, and now it says, most of the discipline away from Roger Goodell.
Right.
Do what you can to get that to all. The commissioner simply should not be in a role in this league where the commissioner is deciding these disputes. And I think there was a time when the commissioners in sports leagues at one time, I think the role was perceived, and I didn't live through this, so maybe, so if anybody's out there, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. But that role was supposed to be sort of a custodian of the game, where, like, I'm thinking of Kennesaw Mountain Landis, like somebody who's in there thinking of the best interest of the game.
And you can make the argument that Roselle did that.
Could be against the players, could be against the owners. Giamatti. Was it Giamatti who suspended Steinbrenner?
No.
That would never happen in the NFL.
He suspended Rose. I think Faye Vincent suspended Steinbrenner.
And that that killed him.
Right. Gene Michael came in, blah, blah, blah.
But that was like the beginning of the end of Faye Vincent. You wouldn't see.
Yeah, they brought in the car dealer. I mean, after Giamatti died and they brought in Faye Vincent. Selig,
who was an owner.
Yeah, Bud Selig, yeah. Put an owner as commissioner. Effectively, that's what the NFL has with Goodell. You want to talk about, I overuse the phrase useful idiot. That's Goodell. He looks good in a suit. The ginger friggin' menace looks good in a suit and is a useful idiot for the NFL.
Do you know about Goodell's father?
He's a senator out of New York, right?
He was a senator who, oh God, what party was he in? I believe he was a Republican.
Charles Goodell, right?
Yes. Charles Goodell. And he was a senator from New York who, during his term, so he was appointed governor and no, he's appointed by the governor to be a senator.
Oh, and so he earned it.
Well, no, but it killed his career because what happened was when he was in the Senate, he stood up to his party. He took a controversial stand. I'm trying to remember what the stand was, but it was essentially one of these things where, and I'm like scanning his
Wikipedia profile,
trying to jog my memory on this.
He was appointed by Rockefeller,
right?
In the mid to late 60s. Yes. And he was set up. There was conservative upheaval in New York. Somehow we've become a New York State politics podcast. Well done.
I'm trying to remember if this had something to do with Watergate.
This is riveting shit going on.
It wasn't Watergate.
It wasn't Watergate. Let's move on. Goodell sucks. Let's move on.
I'm getting to the bottom of this. Listen, I don't care how bored the audience is right now. We are going to, when Goodell learned life is no game, the New York Times, here we go. Story about Roger Goodell.
By the way, his handwritten letter to his father that was leaked, quote unquote leaked. Ugh.
I got it. His father spoke out against the Vietnam War, bringing the wrath of the Nixon administration and the disaffection of conservative voters. So this is what I find. This is a fact that I find fascinating about Roger Goodell. So fascinating that I almost remembered half of it. But
I'm glad one of us find it fascinating.
But here's what happened. His father took a difficult stand, alienating his political support. He did the right thing. His father did the right thing, and it cost him his job. And Roger Goodell has never done the right thing when his job was in jeopardy. That's what Roger Goodell learned from his father's sacrifice, standing up to the Vietnam War.
I'm afraid to say what I think about Roger Goodell.
Never do the right thing. And that's the commissioner we have. And they have to do everything they can to get the discipline out of his hands. He is lawless. He was very lucky in the Tom Brady case because there was a very good argument to be made that he was biased against Brady. And the federal court, there were four federal judges have heard that case. Two of them sided with Brady. Two of them sided with the NFL. But it was in the circuit court. It was 2 out of 3 was all that they needed. So,
but why was he lucky, Dave? Why was Roger Goodell lucky? Because NFLPA rolls over goddamn time. No, they gave him overarching powers to do whatever discipline he wanted.
Well, actually, master. If you read the decision of the lower court, they were saying that the apparent bias it nullified the rights of the collective bargaining agreement. And I understand why the two judges at the appellate level who sided with the NFL, I understand why they did it. They didn't want to open a can of worms in other matters, okay? They want a collective bargaining agreement to be sacrosanct. And so to keep that can of worms
open. It was approved the sacrosanct because the NFLPA rolled over.
Well,
Yes.
Not exactly.
Not exactly. Okay.
Not exactly. Because you're right that because they rolled over, that gave them the excuse to do what they did. You're correct about that. But it would have been totally possible for the court to look at the process and within the boundaries of the law say that this process was not acceptable.
But it was. It's very. It rarely happens. Agreed.
Right. They don't want to
because the CBA is sacrosanct.
Right.
It's negotiated.
They didn't want to be in that position to evaluate that process.
Yeah, you can't overturn that shit when it's approved and filed and all that stuff.
But withholding the notes, essentially rubber stamping their own decision. And I wish the court had done it, because when I look at how that might apply to teachers unions or steelworkers unions or the Teamsters,
that's exactly why they didn't do it.
I know. And I wish that they had, because it would have been more personally, I think it would have been the right thing to do, but it also would have resulted in tons of frivolous cases that they didn't want to open that can of worms.
They didn't have the courage of Charles Goodell, Dave. They didn't have the courage of Charles Goodell.
Well, Roger doesn't, that's for sure.
Yeah, well.
But you're right. Listen, they've clearly made progress on this issue. Get it from most to all. Don't give Roger Goodell. Everything just goes to an independent arbitrator. That's the way it should be.
Weep, cupcake, weep.
So, I think, I mean, I don't know if we'll be back to talk about this next week, maybe the week after. I think there just might be more.
I think when things come up that are, we find worthy discussion in the off season, and Lord knows the March 18th Brady deadline, will probably do something leading up to that. Mm-hmm. But
in the draft,
I think the draft, of course, I think it's important that we exist. I think our mission statement is call shit out when shit needs to be called out.
Yes. Our existence is crucial.
It's big if true.
Have we got an email recently?
EntitledTown@gmail.com. Please send us your praise, your excoriation, whatever it is. Do we have any reviews on? Do we have any reviews?
So, this is like,
if Ned Snark hasn't chimed in, Ned, we love you. No, I get it.
Ned has not chimed in recently. Okay, so I'm trying to figure out exactly where our last. So it seems like it's one to read. And what's killing me is, like, I asked you all to get us over into triple digit ratings, and we're still at 98.
All right.
This is just embarrassing. Like, I mean,
now I know what Andy Hart feels like.
Ironhead and I didn't rate this. Like, we could have gone in there and just clicked two and got it to 100.
Yeah, I haven't. That's disingenuous. Wouldn't do it.
Playing this straight. Like, come on, guys. Gentlemen, ladies, and everything in between. Like, come on. Get us over 100. We're not asking a lot there, but this is ridiculous. Just put a rating in and move this thing along. We need to get, like, never mind triple digits. I feel like we should have hundreds of thousands of ratings. That's just me personally. But all I want is get us to triple digits.
What's the color of the sky in your world? We rail against media and talk about pedantic shit. I mean,
one step at a time.
All right, there you go.
Can't get to six digits without the third digit. Get us to the third digit.
What's the review, Dave?
If we don't have 10 million reviews by next week, I don't know what I'm going to do. But okay.
You know what we'll do? We'll take a page out of Minhan's book. We'll suspend our producer. Al, you're on notice.
I think the name of this person is Tim Joneal's mom. So that sounds like maybe the mother of two or three people there. Tim John Eli's mom. I think that might be it. Okay. So the headline is, "It's a podcast." Accurate.
I like it.
Great content based on reality. I think that might be debatable. I think in some cases, I mean, we try to be reality, but in some cases we talk about things where people are reporting fiction.
Yeah, I'm not sure what we're commenting on is reality.
But I get it. I get the point. I think Tim John Eli's mom is right. We are reality based. If you like, quote, hot takes and speculation, this is not the podcast for you. The sound quality is a little rough, but that's on Al.
I assume they're just talking about your voice. Al just full stop.
I think you vouch for this review, though.
Cosign, vouch, you know, triple. You can't triple stamp my double stamp, Brown.
I would never. I just bumped into the microphone. I would never dare try to do that. Okay.
Bumping into the microphone, a true broadcast professional.
I mean, look, as far as the sound quality goes, I'm sure there's a very easy way to do it better. I just don't know what it is yet. So if somebody has a suggestion, just feel free to tell me. Write a review about it. Okay. I feel like we've done a podcast here. How do you feel?
I think we've done almost the podcast, but close enough.
All right, what are we on to? What's next?
Well, I want to tell everybody, remind everybody, if you're listening to this, hopefully you don't need a reminder. Turn off your radios. Also want to give a shout out to somebody that you and I both appreciate and are fond of. Pat Scartell, Patrick Scartelli, we're thinking of you. Come back soon, bro. We're on to the next fake bullshit media controversy, Dave.
All right, man. Free Scartelli.
Free Scartelli.
And hold on a second. I got to find the button. I got to find the button that makes the podcast stop. All right, everybody. Bye for now.
See you.